Today on Criminal Minds, we talk about the problem of sleepwalking. Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to AfterBuzz TV. We are here doing the Criminal Minds After Show, Season 12, Episode 17, In the Dark. I'm your host, Marissa Serafini. You can follow me on Twitter at SerafiniTV. Joining me,
I'm Michelle Cullen. You can find me on Twitter at Michelle_Cullen.
And we have a new panelist joining us.
My name is Karina Vargas. You can find me everywhere on Twitter and Instagram at KarinaXVRGS.
Excellent, Karina. We're very excited to have you joining our panel for the remainder of the season,
yes.
Correct?
Yes.
Yay. So I'll just preface it for all you listeners. Karina, you just recently binged all of the episodes of Criminal Minds. You went like hardcore with this show. What are your thoughts of Criminal Minds?
Oh, I love the show from the beginning. I mean, all of the characters, some who have left, makes me very sad. Mm-hmm. We all know who.
Yes.
But but I love the show. I've been a fan since the first episode. So
Yes. Well, we're very excited to have you join our panel. And so let's start real quick. What were your thoughts of this, Michelle?
I thought that it was really, really good. I found it fascinating that he was kind of this justice killer that lost it completely.
Yeah.
During the nighttime.
Karina,
I like the fact that they, like, showed him. Like, in other episodes, they don't show the unsub right away. And I like how they showed how he was coping with it, or, like, how he was reacting to what he was doing type of thing. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was good.
Yeah. I thought the good thing about this episode is now there have been episodes where they show the unsub, like, almost immediately at the beginning of the episode. In this one, we kind of saw, like, just body parts. Like, we saw his back. We saw, like, maybe some delineation of him. But then slowly throughout the episode, we actually got to see his face and who he was. And then the fact that he actually wasn't truly a bad person.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
This was his act of killing all these victims were, you know, something out of his control.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't out of spite or maliciousness or actually being a serial killer. It's just something his subconscious wanted to figure out.
Yeah.
Let's talk about it, shall we? Funny enough, Karina and I actually watched this episode together. Mm-hmm. And we noticed for the victimology, there were so many dead people in this episode.
There were a lot.
They killed five people at the 4-minute mark of this episode. Yeah. A lot of people died already. And that wasn't even, you know, the whole episode. That was just the first 4 minutes. The body count only went up from there. But yeah, we get all these victims. We get Ron Carini, Jerry Hornsberry, Reba Wilson, and Pearl. Pearl Roberts, and then I also put in my notes the cute guy who got stabbed in the heart. Yeah, he was in Vermont. He was cute. And I was like, and his name was Mike Hood. So we had five people already. But the problem is these victims, some of them were shot in the woods by a rifle, and some of them were stabbed in the heart in a home. And people, the BAU's trying to figure out if, this is two different profiles. Did you think it was two different profiles?
I thought it could have been. There was one episode where they did have two different serial killers that they were tracking in the same town, and they were writing those love notes almost to each other in the personal ads in the newspaper. Right. Do you remember that one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a while ago.
So I was like, it's been done. There's the potential that it's actually a thing. But when they realized that the precision of the heart stabbing and piercing could probably only lead to one unsub because it's such a particular area to strike, and it's a very narrow target.
Yeah,
same thing. I thought that it was probably going to be like a double personality type of thing. I didn't necessarily see the whole sleepwalking, but I was like, oh, they're probably going to have like a double personality, and that's why they're kind of doing the same thing with the heart signature and stuff, but in different areas. So I kind of thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting how they, like, played it out that some were stabbing and some were shooting.
Mm-hmm.
Two completely different methods of killing, but yet the fact that all of them died via being struck by the heart was the indicator that this is the same unsub.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed that, and it was, like, symbolically it says a lot because maybe it just struck something close to his heart, personally.
Yeah.
Metaphorically. But I thought it was interesting, and the fact that they whittled it down so fast that this is actually one person, not two.
Yeah, that's true. They got there quickly.
Yeah, and I didn't expect it to be a double personality, like a split type personality. Oh. I thought it might have been two. Just like two completely different people. Yeah. I was like, what? Because we got, you know, all these victims so fast. I'm like, what's happening? Mm. And I think it was a little too fast for even the audience, normal audience member, to figure out if it was one or two people.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't know how I felt about them getting to that conclusion so quickly, but then the episode made up for it in my eyes by taking a while to get to the house is the link. Look at the houses and look at the history of the houses. Mm-hmm. So in that way, they got part A of the profile. And it took them another 25 minutes of the episode to figure out what's really tying everything together. Because there was no rhyme or reason to the victims.
Yeah. What did you think about, you know, learning more about the victims when we learned information about Bob Joplin, who was the hunter at the beginning, who was first killed? And we learned that he was a poacher, and he wasn't well-liked. But then he had the same commonality with all the other victims, that they weren't the best outstanding citizens. Did you see that coming?
I thought that it was going to be, like, based on maybe someone, like they said, someone that didn't like the whole animal rights and stuff like that. I thought maybe that was the reason for the unsub's killing. But then after that, we start learning more about why he did it. But it was cool.
Yeah. I noticed right away that the two hunters that did not have good records looked very similar. And so in my head, I was like, oh, that means something. I'm going to save that nugget for later, and then it came back later, and I was like, yeah.
I thought so, too, because I feel like almost every episode, particularly this season, that all of our unsubs are surrogates for something else.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it felt like all the male subs, that it was, like, bigger built, a more stockier type of built, and I was like, they looked similar.
Yeah.
So, and then when we saw the picture of the father, actually.
Yep.
It all makes sense. those guys were surrogates for Trey Gordon's father.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Interesting. And then also, with the whole victimology, a lot of people died in this episode. we also had the couple who were killed in their house. But they didn't seem like bad people, so I think this showed the devolvement of the unsub, that they were just being attacked because they were in that house.
Mm-hmm.
Not because they were bad people. They were just in that particular location.
Yeah. Oh, that's my understanding of this episode, is the people he killed during the daytime were intentional targets that he sought out, and then during the nighttime he wasn't even consciously aware of who was residing in that home. It was just, they held a very sordid past and dark history for him, so his mind put old faces into the house.
The places that he's been to, like, in the past, too, that's what connected him to going to those houses and killing them. So.
Yeah, and, you know, it was interesting because as we're putting all the pieces together, as one usually does in this episode, when we're learning more about the unsub, about Trey Gordon, let's talk about the BAU team and their profile delivery, shall we? When we find out that this is where I was getting slightly confused. For the people, the unsubs that died during the day in the woods, they were poachers. But for the people who died in their homes, they were people who weren't necessarily poachers, but just in the houses of the brothels.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Two completely unrelated things, though. And I think that's where I got tripped up, trying to figure out
if there was two people.
Why?
Yeah, that's exactly. Fair.
Yeah. And we learned from Tara was great in this episode.
Tara, I mean,
she had, like, all that information. Yep. But location, I love this, because subconsciously, You can remember places you've been to and walls and not running into things while you're sleepwalking.
Yeah.
Location and spatial reasoning. So we learn in the profile that the unsub somehow has to have been to all these locations at some point in his life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did you see this? Did you understand? So that's how he's getting around these houses.
I mean,
not really.
I've never deeply thought about the process of sleepwalking, and I used to sleepwalk, so I don't.
Did you?
I did up until college. I guess that's fascinating. I never really thought about that subconscious. You remember the blueprint of where you've been before, so that you don't actually run into things.
I kind of wondered, like, when did he go to those places, you know? Like, what time span from his life did he visit them? That's what I kept on wondering, like, throughout the episode until the end that they said it.
But. Yeah. Yeah, well, we learned from Garcia. Gotta love Garcia. Mm-hmm. We learned when he was a kid, his father used to take him to all these brothels. Mm-hmm. Terrible father, terrible parenting. So as a kid, he's literally been to all these house locations. And probably his subconscious remembered it from his childhood.
Yep. Repressed memories that come alive when he's asleep at night and can't shove them out of the way.
I know, the things you remember when you're a kid.
Yeah. Yeah, especially it's locations. Especially, yeah. What did you think? Let's talk about the unsub. What did you think about Trey Gordon? He doesn't really fit the typical profile of an unsub.
I felt such conflicted sympathy for him throughout the entire episode because he's still killing, and that's frowned upon for many, many reasons. But I understood the intention behind the daytime ones, and I understood the psychosis issues behind the nighttime ones.
Yeah.
I just thought he was really young, too.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, wow, like, that's happening to him. He's taking all of these medications and stuff, like, at such a young age, too. To, you know, and also the whole, he was sleep deprived because when he woke up from the killing at night, which he didn't know, he woke up even more tired. So I was like, well, that's why he has to take all of those medications, too. Now that Red Bull and caffeine.
Yeah.
Yeah, and coffee. Did you see that down?
So much coffee.
Down that pot of coffee. I know what that's like. I thought it was interesting because when we saw him during the day, we didn't actually really, other than the first victim at the beginning, we didn't really see him shoot poachers for fun in the woods. You know, we only saw him like at the tail end of his killings in the night, in the dark, so to speak, at night.
I'm not sure if that was intentional to this level, but I feel like that speaks to the daytime killings were so neat and clean, and there was absolutely no trace of anyone being there, which is why we didn't see him. And then at nighttime, it's so haphazard and crazy, and he leaves his DNA all over the place and drops the knife, and that's why we see his full body and see him. Maybe.
Maybe. Yeah, we saw him because, you know, his subconscious mind isn't really thinking. He walks to the locations actually like barefoot or no shoes at least and leaves his DNA is a mess. He wakes up though, loud sounds actually wake him up. I loved when it sounds terrible, but I loved when he went to that one victim and that victim shot the shotgun. He was like, oh, wrong house, dude. Walked into the wrong house, messed with the wrong guy, and the shotgun went off and woke him up.
Yeah,
I thought that was cool.
What I thought was interesting about that is that the guy who shot the shotgun looked a lot like the poachers. So I kind of thought maybe that was a connection. Like, it was like the house, but then also the poacher looked like his dad. Yeah. So I was like, maybe that's where they tried to mix it together. So it's still like part of the woods and then the home invasion. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I thought so too, because that guy looks like a surrogate for his father. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A little bit like the younger version.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I love that he just got stabbed in the chest and got pissed off.
He's like, let me get the shotgun.
He's like, just like, oh, you did not just do that to me.
Not my house.
This is where I relax.
Yeah. I did like this victim, though. I'm glad he survived.
Yeah.
He was like one of the only guys who actually lived in this episode. Because at the end of the episode, 8 people died. Oh, 8. We had 5 people at the 4-minute mark, and then by the end of this episode, 3 more people died. Crazy, crazy. I really enjoyed it, especially, you know, all those, you know, when we're learning more about Trey, we find out that his father died 6 weeks ago, which fits into the profiling of the timeline of all these killings. That's a stressor.
Mm-hmm.
And also just his medication. He has all the symptoms that the preconditions for sleepwalking.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I don't want to say too convenient, but it makes sense.
It does make sense. And it's just, you wonder how much of what he's dealing with now is just a result of the experiences and traumas. There we go. I was going to say traumatizes. That's not that. Traumas that he went through. Traumology.
Yeah.
As a child. and just how if mm-hmm. that shaped, you know, obsessive compulsive disorder within him, because I know to an extent it is hereditary, mm-hmm. But it can also be a result of traumatic stress.
Yes, especially, you know, being the traumatic situation that he was in as a child that his father kind of forced upon him being mm-hmm. in those brothels. But we find out that he has the conditions of anxiety, OCD, and borderline personality disorder. Mm-hmm. So that's just a trifecta, being the preconditions of sleepwalking. That's just for sleepwalking. But we saw that moment when he wakes up and he's awake and realizes what he's doing. But this is when I'm like, oh, he's actually kind of a good guy. He has a conscience. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He doesn't want to kill people. He's doing this because he can't control himself. And he has this moment when he hides all of his knives. And, of course, he forgets one.
He forgets one decorative knife that's just out there.
I'm like, of course he does. Of course he does. It was a nice effort. He puts away his shotgun and all the knives and locks it away so he doesn't kill anyone.
Yep, and locks himself into the house.
But he forgets, like, the one decorative one that's literally on the table in, like, the public domain.
And I thought that he would remember where he would place them because he was fully awake. So isn't that, like, in your subconscious, if you're sleepwalking, I'm like, oh, well, I remember. I put them in this big drawer or whatever. So I was like, I thought he would probably remember and go in there to get all of them anyways.
I thought it was a sweet effort of him to lock himself in his home. But it was also like, if you can break into a stranger's house that you went to when you were 8 years old, you can get out of your own apartment that you live in now.
He didn't really break in. He just, like, knocked on the door twice and just opened the door. Yeah. Like, oh, I'm here. Poor Janice. Poor Janice. I mean, if I was in her position, I'd be really afraid. I thought it was really brilliant, though, how they showed it. Like, what he sees when he's sleeping. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's actually subconsciously trying to stab his own father.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was interesting.
I thought that was brilliant.
Yes.
Didn't see that.
I love that they did that superimposing of his dad on the door because it got a little The Shining.
Yeah,
For a second.
I was thinking Bates Motel.
I loved it. I appreciated it.
You know, Bates Motel or know, Psycho. Definitely with the stabbing aspect.
Is that the one? I'm terrible at seeing movies. The one, like, here's Johnny.
Yeah, that's The Shining.
Okay.
That's The Shining. I just saw stabbing.
Like, all happy. Yeah. Like,
no, you're right. I just saw stabbing. It wasn't in the shower, but like the stabbing motions are just over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. That was cool, though. Like, I liked how we actually saw what he was seeing subconsciously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it makes sense why he was killing all these people. I felt bad for him, especially, I liked the moment when the FBI comes, takes him down.
Yeah,
but I thought the actor was really good as the unsub.
He did really, really well.
Yeah.
My favorite part was when he was, like, pouring out all the all his pills and then calling his doctor. I was like, oh my gosh, like, that was such great acting right there when he was all yelling and stuff. I love that.
That was good. Let's talk about the receptionist for the doctor for a second.
Right.
Just hanging up on a patient who's clearly going through a deep mental break. Like, if you work at that kind of office, I feel like hanging up isn't the proper thing.
Yeah, right. Dr. Page is out of office and she just hangs up. How dismissive. I thought that was rude. I completely agree. But I thought the acting was great in that one moment because you can see his character devolving a bit, but you can also understand why he's on medication.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He has anger control issues, anger management issues, and anxiety. But I felt like he didn't seem like a bad person. He was just going through a mental break.
Yeah.
And he wanted to get help, too. He called his doctor.
He was trying to help himself.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's why I was, like, rooting for this guy. Sounds terrible because he's an unsub. But, he's not the typical malicious unsub who's killing for fun or sadistic in that way that he just can't help it.
Yeah.
So he kind of has, like, a way out.
Yeah. That moment at the end when they fire the shotgun, wake him up, and then he's like, can you help me, please? Mm-hmm. And then he finds out how many people are dead.
Oh, no, that was heartbreaking. Oh,
so great good. Acting.
Kudos to that actor.
Great acting. And I feel like a lot of unsubs, not, you know, like, we love the show, obviously, but I feel sometimes the unsubs aren't the greatest, strongest actors, where you can feel for them emotionally, but I felt for this character.
Yeah, I did too.
And I feel like, I can't really remember, and that could just be the day I've had, the last unsub that would have caused us to feel this much sympathy. I feel like it's been pretty straightforward. They're just evil. They've had a stressor, but they don't really feel sympathy for their actions. And this is one of the most sympathetic killers we've had in a long time.
In a long time.
On the show.
Yeah, I agree. I really enjoyed that. And just, you know how the BAU just quickly figured it out, took them down. And I'm glad that this guy lived at the end. I didn't want him. There was that one line Roxy was like, if anything, this will wake him up. Or this will stop him. I was like, all right, Roxy. But,
he had some good
actual shotgun. he had some great lines.
Yeah.
All right. It was either that or Walker. One of those two.
I think Walker shot
him. Oh, yeah.
Walker, I think Roxy had the line and Walker had the shotgun.
Yeah. Pretty awesome. I did love Walker's mini pep talk towards Prentice. It wasn't even a pep talk, but what were your thoughts of this?
I thought that was so funny. I was like, that's me trying to pep talk my friends. Like, I'm horrible. Like, I'll say something that will, like, end up coming out wrong or saying something that'll make them feel worse. Yeah. So I'm like, I relate.
He tried.
It was as sweet as hems.
He tried. I felt bad for Emily, though. You can definitely tell that she's really worried about Reed.
Yep.
I mean, all of us are.
Yeah.
We even saw Garcia at the beginning of the episode. She's literally crying.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, that made me so sad.
What are your thoughts of them? Of, like, Garcia's always having her, you know, her moments of humanity, but they're trying to, I don't really want to say pair, but they're always, like, pairing up Alves with her to be that friend, to be the consoling shoulder to cry on.
I mean, to an extent, I feel that was inevitable because he replaced Derek Morgan.
Essentially.
So her best friend, one of her closest confidants, left the office, and then this new guy comes in. So it's taking the feeling she has toward this new guy and kind of creating that situation where, yeah, you're going to see a lot of them together because eventually she's going to melt a little bit and they're going to be friends.
I'm kind of glad that she's having someone there now that Morgan left. So I'm kind of... I mean, I'm not glad that Morgan left, but, like, I'm glad that she's finally has somebody to, like, talk to, especially with what's going on with Reed. She usually either goes to him or JJ, but JJ's also kind of, like, trying to figure out stuff with Reed, so I'm glad Alves is at least there to comfort her.
Yeah. No, go ahead.
I was going to say, now that we know that Shamar is coming back for the season's finale, I really, really hope, and I'll be disappointed if there isn't, but a moment between Luke... Derek and Garcia.
We have to get that moment.
Like, he has to see who's replaced him. And
I mean, Prentice did that when Jean Triplehorn was still there. In the 200th episode when she came back to help save JJ. When Blake. Blake was her name. When Blake was still there. And she's like, oh, yeah, I know you. Yeah, I feel like we're definitely going to get that moment, especially because now we're seeing this friendship bloom between Garcia and Alves, not to see how much Garcia's relationship has changed when Derek comes back, if it has changed at all, if, like, aspects are different and the dynamic of their relationship is different because they're just not there together on a regular basis. I'm excited for that.
Yes.
That'll be fun. That's just good drama in and of itself. But, yes, let's talk about Reed in the prison. Reed was really frustrating this episode. And I'll say what. Love Reed. But the fact that he's getting a little cocky now. I don't think he realizes what people are going through, just the lengths that they're going through, just so Reed is safe. And the fact that he's kind of abusing his quote-unquote power and the fact that he's untouchable and his invincibility. For granted, he's taken it for granted that he doesn't realize that he can't really help other people, even though he's not being affected.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think he doesn't realize just the lengths that prison operates on a different playing field.
Yeah, I just think, like, Reed is such a good guy that's why he's doing that. Like, I don't know if he could help it because he's... like in the BAU helping innocent people, and Luis is like his friend now in prison, so I feel like that's why he's trying to protect him. But yeah, I totally agree with everything that you guys said. So
yeah, I it's frustrating because he is such a smart guy, but mm-hmm. the fact that he's not realizing how the system's still working yet,
mm-hmm.
Especially in that prison, is kind of frustrating. That it, maybe it just shows his high IQ, low EQ.
Yeah.
Once again. But that's still true to his character.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Definitely.
What did you think of Alvez's conversation with Kelvin?
Oh, I thought it was so bamf, though.
Ooh, yeah, it was. Yeah, it was.
Just...
Why?
He just... I don't know. Calvin tried to control the situation. He tried to control the room the way that he controls the prison, and Luke wasn't having it.
Mm-hmm.
And Luke outsmarted him. And I love that. And it got Shaw to protect Reed again. And it was just... It was something that no one else on the team could offer.
Yeah.
I was like, Alvez is badass right now. Yep. But that is exactly what I thought of that scene. I was like, in a way, it was like blackmailing him. But I was like, well, he's trying to protect his friend inside the prison. So, like, I mean, I'm fine with it.
Yeah. He got dark. We saw a really dark side of Alvez, which is not really funny, but it's still interesting because you got to remember the first episode we saw him. You got to remember, he is a tracker. He knows how to properly track.
Yeah.
Killers and bad guys, and the fact that he could just track down Kelvin's history and use that against him just for protection for Reed, that was twisted but brilliant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was and hearing the backstory on the informant who got shot and learning more about that autopsy in that case, he got Shaw, who was standing up to leave, to come back to the table and sit down and listen, so you knew he had something on him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the roles were switched
compared
to how he runs the prison to how Alvez was sitting there and talking to him.
Power play.
I bet that's going to bug him, and we're going to see that agitation throughout the rest of the season because Shaw isn't in control anymore.
Alvez
is in control.
And in a way, we kind of saw that when he was sitting down and he was talking to Reed. Well, like, oh, well, now you have protection. Like, what are you thinking? Like, that we kind of saw it there, but I hope that they kind of dig more into that. So.
Yeah. I just find it surprising that it's Alvez out of all the people in the BAU that Alvez is the one who has control over all of this.
Yeah.
Which is great. It makes his character, like, way more valuable as well. It just, like, gives him more... meaning. I mean, he's adding a lot to the to the show, but I work too much. He adds a lot to the BAU, but like is really giving his character meaning and like a role within the BAU to help protect the other members of the team.
Like, he didn't even visit Reed that day. He just went to deliver a message.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
To protect him.
Yeah. Yep. And now I don't feel bad for Kelvin either, because like, watching Kelvin after all these episodes, I was like, okay, if anything bad happens to him, I'd feel bad. But knowing how Kelvin got there in prison,
yeah
he kind of deserved it. Yeah, he turned himself in, but the reason why?
1 year later.
Twisted.
So twisted. Like, Alvez was right. He got away with it. It was 1 year.
Yeah.
And he could have gotten away with it after.
But he did have a conscience, which made him turn himself in.
Yep.
For the wrong reason.
Yeah.
He didn't want to ruin his own family.
That's so crazy.
He killed one potential family just to save his current family.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Bad guy. He's a bad guy.
Yep.
And it just kind of goes back to the line of last week's episode, we're all psychopaths in here. It's like, yeah, you kind of are. Like, great profiling of yourself. But what did you think of the end moment? I think was a big doozy. When Luis, after reads all of his, you know, tries of trying to save his friend, attempts to save his friend, Luis doesn't really end up working out in his favor.
I wasn't super surprised by it because the preview last week had Reed screaming for help at an angle where you could tell he was holding someone, and Luis is the easiest target for that.
Yeah, I thought so too.
My biggest concern is that they're going to blame Reed for that, like, in a weird way. Like, I feel like maybe they're going to try to pin his murder because no one else was there. They just left, and then Reed was grabbing the towel, and like all his blood was in his hands, so that's why I was like, oh, they better not try to switch that and then pin him for a double murder.
Yeah, I thought the same thing too. I was like, I hope they don't mm-hmm. blame Reed for Luis's reason why they slit his throat.
Yeah, because they just left, so it was like, no one's going to be there.
Where's the security? Like, where's the prison guard? Because all the other times we see them in the washing room, there's always a guard there, mm-hmm. and there was no guard there this time.
That paid mm-hmm. off.
He did. Who Maybe. Paid him off? And we also got the line that because Reed can't get into protective custody, something is blocking it. What is it?
I don't know. I'm a little worried. See, I didn't even think about that, doing a double murder thing, because I was more focused on the fact that Reed's in there for at least another month, and mm-hmm. these guys have a drug shipment coming in 2 weeks mm-hmm. that Reed is now responsible for, even though he's protected. So what is he going to do?
Yeah, a shipment that's coming in that has to go to the big bad guy. I don't even think we got his name.
I don't think so.
But he's like the leader of these bad, even more bad inmates yep. in mm-hmm. that place. I'm assuming it's drugs. Or something nefarious. But that's also going to get Reed in trouble because mm-hmm. that's also, he's doing this illegal in prison.
Yeah.
Either way, Reed is getting in trouble.
Yeah,
somehow. Oh, yeah, for sure.
More.
Or he's going to get caught in the middle of something, mm-hmm. and that'll add more time to his sentence. Oh. How terrible would that be?
25 to life was enough.
Yeah, seriously. I think that's getting into predictions, yes. then.
And now, you're after Buzz TV. Predictions.
So, because of, you know, the articles that we've read and stuff, Reed's going to be in prison for a while. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he can't even like, getting this case towards, like, to another person, the soonest it's going to happen is, or, like, any action happens, will be one more month. So we're going to get a few more episodes mm-hmm. of him in prison. But what do you think is going to happen?
I don't know for sure. I don't think it's going to end well for Shaw. Just knowing the type of characters that Harold, I can't say his last name, has played, Pignot, it's a French name. Sorry, mm-hmm. Harold. That Harold has played in the past, they're all tragically complicated humans, and they die. So I don't know that he'll die, but I don't think he's going to get any sort of a happy ending. And I do think he's going to get, like, a weird closure thing. Whether he's locked up for life or he does die in prison, he might, I don't know. I just, knowing him as an actor and seeing the work he's done in the past, I feel that, based on the preview we saw, I feel like Reed's going to flip the tables in prison a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Flip the script.
I'm really intrigued by. He's going to start playing prison like a chessboard.
Well, he has to.
Yeah.
For his survival, yeah. Mm. Right now, he's just thinking smart, so now he has to just be street smart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I kind of felt that, too, where, like, he's going to take charge and be kind of, like, in his footsteps type of thing. But also, I think, like, I'm not sure if, like, Luis will survive that neck cut. But I'm not hoping that Reed will get pinned for his murder, because I don't want that. But I kind of have a feeling that that's something that they might explore. So.
Okay. Well, Karina, because you're new to the panel, I predicted, I believe it was last week, that I still think Scratch somehow is working this prison system. Because when we found out the line tonight that that something is blocking his protective custody, something's happening. Someone's messing with the legal system, with the documentation and stuff. And I feel that's like via computer work or filing some clerical work. And I think Scratch is working that. So Reed, he's literally keeping Reed where he wants to be, and I still think Scratch is somewhere at work in that prison.
Well, if he didn't think about that.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, because we've seen his, we know what Scratch looks like, but we actually haven't seen him physically in prison, but I think he's working that particular prison system. Something
interesting. That is interesting. Because I kind of forgot a little bit about Scratch for a second with all this Reed talk, but yeah. Because isn't that supposed to be how the season might be ending with Scratch? Because isn't that hopefully why Shamar Moore is coming back?
Shamar Moore is coming back with more information on Scratch. Hopefully. And hopefully this is like the takedown of Scratch.
Catch him in the season finale.
But that's the thing. If this is a clerical error that's blocking Reed from a simple transfer as such as this, I think Garcia could, like, find out what's blocking this transfer. She could go in and find, like, oh, this is Scratch. Here's his location. Let's get him.
Oh, and what if Scratch is manipulating or, like, doing the weird thing that he does to the prisons, to the prison guards? Because remember when he first got there, that one prison guard, he looked at the list and Reed's name was on the paper. Yeah, on the paper to be in that thing, and then he just picked him and said, "No, you're staying here." Ooh, so what if that happens?
Oh, that's true.
That's a good theory.
That's even taken everything farther.
Yeah.
Oh.
So are we a consensus that Scratch is somewhere in this prison?
He's working the prison.
Yeah, he has to be working this prison.
Absolutely.
He has to be working this prison.
Yeah.
Okay. I really don't have anything else to say to that, because that's also great. Yeah. What if he's working the prison guards and we didn't know? But that would also make sense why the prison guards aren't there when they're supposed to be.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Mind blown. All right. Anything else about this episode? About your predictions? About what the heck is going to happen?
No, I think
that was it.
I did love the end quote. How blessed are some people whose life have no fears, no dreads, to whom sleep is a blessing that comes nightly and have nothing but sweet dreams. Bram Stoker.
I did like that.
I
like that because I'm a big insomniac, so I was like, yeah, some people do have lucky lives when they can fall asleep immediately. So other than that, thank you for joining me once again. And in the meantime, where can everyone follow you on Twitter?
Well, you guys can follow me at KarinaXVRGS on Twitter and Instagram.
You can find me on Twitter at Michelle_Cullen.
And you can follow me on Twitter at SerafineTV. You can follow all of us here, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all those fun social media platforms, at AfterBuzzTV. Keep rating, keep commenting, keep subscribing. We have a few more episodes left of the season. Mm-hmm. When is Scratch going to come back? Probably the finale, when we'll see Shamar Moore once again. Thanks, everyone. We will see you next time.
Bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.